This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Gaze podcast. You can hear us live on Joy 94.9 Saturday afternoon from noon via the live stream at joy.org.au/listen-live. Or tune your wireless in Melbourne to 94.9 FM.
1, 2, 3, 4.
Use it, break it, fix it, trash it, change it, nail it, grade it, change it, point it to me, press it, snap it, work it, quick, erase it, write it, cut it, paste it, save it, load it, check it, quickly write it, plug it, play it, burn it, rip it, drag it, drop it, zip and zip it, lock it, fill it, call it, find it, view it, code it, jam it, lock it, surf it, scroll it.
This is Joy 94.9 and you're listening to Technogaze, where we gaze into the world of consumer electronics, gadgets and technology. I'm Michael and joining me today is Mark.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Mr. Button Pusher.
Button Pusher? What were you going to ask? I was a bit worried there.
I was going to say.
Isn't it a wonderful grand final day here in Melbourne on Joy 94.9?
It can't be grand final day. It's not raining.
That's true, actually.
Actually, no, wait a minute. It's Melbourne. It's early.
Yes, I know.
We have 2.5 hours to go.
The weather is looking good for the rest of the day, but we've mentioned grand final, and that is all we need to do for the next hour, right? That's the last mention of.
But isn't the show about the grand final? Technology and football?
I was stumped before. I was like, someone asked me here on Joy, who's going to win? I'm like,
yeah. Was the question, who's playing?
is my team Carlton in the grand final? I don't know.
You're obviously a strong supporter then, aren't you?
Evidently, I am.
Yes. Well, I have changed the show notes, and it is technology about football.
Oh, no. Well, as long as you've got notes, and that's okay.
No. We are steering clear about football, but we are launching into space.
We are?
Well, we're not, but a Japanese company believes that it can by 2050 via a space elevator.
Really?
So we'll hear a little bit more about that.
Very good.
The Victorian State Government and Facebook are getting together to combat cyberbullying.
Right.
Which is a good initiative.
Yes.
And thanks to Richard Nixon and Tim Cook, we're going to have a look at Bendigate, the latest about Apple and its woes with the iPhone 6 Plus bending.
Richard Nixon, who's he?
Oh,
someone. Stay tuned.
We have a generation gap. He was a US president that was almost impeached because of Watergate.
Right.
Bendigate.
Right. Yeah. We really have to get over this whole naming every controversy gate.
This is where it comes from.
I'm going to create a new gate. It's controversy gate. It's like the Uber everything gate.
What would have happened if the hotel was not Watergate but Holiday Inn? It would be Bendy Inn. We'd have so much more fun.
Where is that bending to? What else have we got on later on the show? We've got a bit of Chinese stuff going on, right?
Yeah, Alibaba launched or catapulted onto the stock market.
Yes.
Raising an unprecedented $25 billion.
Boing.
And causing some problems for Yahoo, who are one of the its early investors.
So yeah.
We'll have a look why. Yeah, what? And Eric Schmidt has been lecturing the Europeans.
Yes, now Eric Schmidt is Google's...
Chairman, yes.
Co-founder or that sort of thing.
He was talking to them about their need to accept disruption, technology and free market.
Yeah.
And in the tinfoil category...
Ah, my favourite.
There's been a huge bug that's been discovered in the open source community.
The entire internet lit up over this. What was this one called? Shellshocked is the hashtag.
No gate on it?
No. No.
That's a missed opportunity. So we're going to have a bit of a bash about that
story. Boom, boom.
Where is the...
I don't have it.
We should have rehearsed. And there's been another large theft of credit card details from a large US retailer.
This is an action-packed show. I mean, how much have we got to get through?
Heaps.
A lot.
Exactly. Plus, we're going to kick a footy around, maybe.
Oh, no. That's going to fail miserably.
I know. I'm going to miss the ball. Hand-eye coordination doesn't exist.
Yep.
Now, if anybody wants to contact us, they can email us on air at joy.org.au.
Yes.
They can call us on what numbers, Mark?
042. Oh, wait. Calling us is 1300 Joy 949.
Or SMSing on 0427
Joy 949.
That's the one.
Yep. So it's 0427 if you're going to text us. If you want to call us, 1300 at the front.
Yes, and leave a message with Mushin.
onair@joy.org.au is the email address.
And we love to hear from you. And yes, we also love our new Facebook followers.
Yes.
So Morgan, Alexander and Danny, thank you very much.
Thank you, Danny.
Spread
Morgan.
The word to your friends, and the more likes we get, the happier we are.
Yes. Every new like a mark, I don't know, I grow wings. Just momentarily.
Right.
I think.
Let's leave it at that.
Yes.
Now, science fiction talks a lot about space elevators.
Yes.
And a Japanese company is saying that they can build one.
Yes. So this is a yet another example of where sci-fi meets reality. I mean, well, let's not get ahead of ourselves, right? So this company has decided or put out a release to say that they'll be able to do this by 2050.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a concept of having like a long wires that extend up into the
space.
Yeah, into space, actually. It's like, and we're talking many, many kilometres.
96,000 they're talking about. 96,000 kilometres, sorry.
96,000?
Yeah. So it's a very long string from the ground, 96,000 kilometres up into space.
So the idea is to be able to, this is actually suspended with, you know, the gravitational forces that occur. I mean, once you get to a certain height, it could be, what, it's just sort of suspended there out of the force of...
Well, I think what happens is the bit in space essentially floats. Well, floats is the wrong word, but, you know, stays in space in geosynchronous orbit, so it follows the rotation of the Earth.
Yes.
And then essentially what you're doing is you're lowering a long piece of string that you tether to the ground on the Earth.
Right.
It is a very long, very, very long piece of string.
Mm.
And what you can do is attach a car to the cable and just zoom up and down like any ordinary elevator.
Right. Because the amount of energy required to lift something out into space is massive. I mean, you look at a rocket that launches from Cape Canaveral in the US, and you see all that gas and whatever spewing out of the bottom of it to try and make it lift.
Not to mention all of the preparation beforehand and everything else.
Ensuring that flammable content stays contained
in
within
the right area. Yes.
Yeah. So having a space elevator is an interesting concept. It's been something that has been talked about in sci-fi books and so forth for quite some time, but you know, it's that one of those things that the Japanese seem to want to get on top of.
Well, one of the challenges is, of course, making material long enough for this strong enough for this piece of string, for want of a better word. And there's material out there called carbon nanotubes,
right,
which are 100 times stronger than steel.
Yes,
they can be manufactured, and that's what they're hoping to use to
100 times stronger than steel. I wonder what the weight
carbon is very light.
Right.
One of the challenges, however, is that today the technology only allows you to grow these strands to 3 centimetres in length, which is a tad shy of 96,000.
That's not 96,000, is it? No.
I don't think they're going to grow a single length of 96,000.
Yeah.
You know, they might be joined somehow.
So it's grown?
Well, yeah, I believe it. I think it's a grown type of material.
Mm, interesting.
We should get our resident physicist on one day to talk about carbon nanotubes.
What an excellent idea.
Or maybe if he's listening, he could send an email and correct us.
Hello, Craig, if you are.
Now, the good thing is that if it does work,
the
cost to move a kilogram of mass of matter into space is going to be reduced from about $22,000 today to $200.
Wow.
Which is a huge reduction, but it's still going to be cheaper for me to fly to Europe on a kilo-by-kilo basis.
Well, how much does it cost you today, kilo-by-kilo?
Well, you don't pay by kilo to Europe, do you? But in my svelte 20-kilo frame...
Yes.
Like how old I am, but that's a whole other story.
Now, should we do quickly Facebook and the initiative here in Victoria?
Yeah, so Victorian State Government have got a program called Speak Up Against Cyberbullying, and they've gone into partnership with Facebook to launch an advertising campaign targeting teenagers and parents.
Okay, so it's just an advertising campaign, isn't it?
Yeah, well, it's an information campaign that's going to give parents, teachers and young people tools to combat cyberbullying.
Now, it's estimated that 1 in 5 young Victorians experience cyberbullying, which is a pretty high number when you think about it.
It is a
20%
very high number.
Of youth today And cyberbullying is essentially a new-ish thing in terms of, you know, generationally. It's not really something that I, as a Gen Yer, as a very early Gen Yer,
yep.
didn't really have the opportunity to experience because, at, you know, we didn't have the likes of Facebook or yeah. that sort of thing. Like, the most they could do is send an email to me, and it would right. probably have ended up in my spam box anyway, right? So, it's, you know, it's good that governments are getting on board with this type of initiative to push the, you know, the agenda that actually bullying is crap,
right. That's
regardless
right.
of what medium it's mm. under. And kudos to the government as well for doing this, for bullying in the first place. There was awareness back when I was a kid of, you know, what bullying is, but it was very much a local thing. Like the school that I went to would, yep. would talk about it, but it wasn't really something that reached levels of government mm-hmm. sort of focus. And I wonder, you know, it's probably just it's a look at... you know, the fact that we need to address this in the youth, but there's also the funding element of it. If we reduce cyberbullying, then the mental health concerns that occur result from any bullying, are drastically reduced.
You know, there's been a huge change, I think, in awareness, and it's a generational change about things like bullying.
So not only is it a great thing for society to get rid of bullying, but it's also a funding issue as well.
Yeah. Mm. So that's pretty good news.
Yeah, Facebook, I don't experience, but I'm not that, you know, I guess I'd try to reduce the number of people who affect me on my Facebook feed.
Mm. But, you know, whether you can do teenagers that as or young people, you know, get very much take, I guess, comments on board to heart very easily.
Mm,
mm. And so, I think the way that as an adult you judge or react to something like that is very different to the way that you do as a younger person.
Yeah, and, you know, finding your feet in the world is part of what you do when you're a teenager. So, you know, being able to respond to that in an appropriate way is a good thing.
That's right. Now... we are going to be looking at Bendigate very, very shortly.
Bendigate.
Yes. So...
I think it was actually Bendgate, wasn't it, was the coined term in the media, but we turned it into Bendigate.
First heard here on Joy 94.9 on Technogaze. And we'll be back with more very shortly. Technogaze. It is 17 minutes past midday. You're listening to Joy 94.9. This is Technogaze with Mark and Michael.
Myself. Hello, Michael.
Hello, Mark. Bendgate or Bendigate?
Bendigate. So bless. It only took, what, a week, maybe 2 weeks for a major controversy to occur with the latest version of the iPhone.
But doesn't that happen every time there's a new phone?
Mm. And you wonder if there's an element of, you know, kicking the tall poppy or cutting it down or something like that?
Well, I think it's more an element of taking advantage of when the tall poppy is vulnerable to give it a little kick somewhere sensitive.
Yes. So if you have been living under a rock or haven't seen much of the most recent news, particularly around Apple, Bendgate has come about because iPhone 6 Pluses,
which is the large one,
the big one,
the phablet, shall we call it?
Phablet. It is pretty big. I had one in my hand and I was like, that's too big.
And I can imagine you really wouldn't get your thumb across the screen, would you?
Yes, but they have a software solution to that. But we're not going to go into the, you know.
Let me guess, it's a 3D printed thumb extender.
Yes.
Oh, ooh, that's a good idea.
That's such an Apple thing to do, to have a 3D printer shipped to you. So Bendigate or Bendgate is where people reported having the phone in their pockets and under typical scenarios that were reported. Mm-hmm. So things like just having it in their pocket in perhaps some skinny jeans.
Like a back pocket or something like that.
Or a back pocket or, you know, actually bumping into someone with it in their pocket as well. Yep. The phone itself actually bent.
Oh.
So, and we're talking like lengthways, I guess. So from top to bottom, yep. it would bend that way. And the problem is that the casing of the iPhone 6 and 6 Plus is aluminium.
Right.
So, you know, it's not exactly the most, it's not
the strongest piece.
Yeah. it's apparently, according to Apple anyway, is reinforced with steel inside the yep. device. But that didn't stop it from these things happening.
And I guess the 6 Plus being 5.5 inches is so much bigger than, you know, than previous models that there's more chance of it happening.
Yeah, there's more ability, I guess, too. And you even see videos now of actually people purposely bending
it.
It's like, why would you do that to a perfectly good phone? I mean, really? Like,
just to prove that it does bend?
Yeah.
I'm sure you can get most phones to bend or break if you actually force it. But, you know, there's been a lot of hoo-ha, but Apple have said, well, hang on a minute, there have only been 9 cases.
9 cases that have been reported to
right.
Apple anyway.
Yeah.
So, and these might be the 9 cases that just happen to have a video camera pointed at the phone while they do the bending.
Yes.
Like, you actually, like, by the fact of people, you know, videoing this, it's almost like people are viewing this as an opportunity to get themselves out as you know major tech publicists or
well,
something
it's
like
a
that.
Way to get your name in the press, isn't it? Because
yeah.
a lot of blogs have picked up on this. You know, it's
yep.
on mainstream media now as well.
Yep. And of course, it's apparently not a problem for other phones. Well, that's what the implication is, but people have complained about it in other phones as well, particularly of that sort of size. So you wonder how much of it is just simply getting on the bandwagon because it's Apple and, you know, they're so good at design and
yeah.
and that sort of thing, whether, you know, that's actually part of it as opposed to, you know, reporting a legitimate problem. Apple themselves have responded in a not so... in a pretty sort of even-handed
yep.
way. So they've actually put out a press release. They got a bunch of press people into their testing facility
mm-hmm.
over in Cupertino
right.
in
yep.
In California to show everyone what is actually done to test these phones to make
right.
you know, put them under pressure
yep.
and that sort of thing. You know, and they did this once before back in I think 2010 when AntennaGate occurred. So when you could hold the 4S's phone
in a certain way
yeah. and reduce the reception. They showed their testing facility back then with the you know, the isolated rooms that they
yeah.
would put the phones in and
mm-hmm.
and test them in as well. That of course resulted in a freebie of bumpers to allow you to not be actually in contact with the antenna.
To hold your phone without it, you know, causing the problem, yeah.
Yeah, but this time around they've opened up the doors again and they've shown a whole bunch of machines that put thousands and thousands of iPhones under different pressures.
Yep.
And the things that they've tested for are things like, you know, scenarios where it is in your pocket and it's a skinny jeans pocket and, you know, they have machines that sort of put pressure on it of 20 kilos or, you know, that sort
yeah.
of thing. So they've obviously done some testing to this effect already. According to Apple, 10,000 phones have been tested prior to even, you know, releasing the iPhone. So you'd imagine that they would be well aware of its, you know, limitations and so forth.
And if, you know, they've sold, what, 1 million units? Or no, it was 10 million units the first weekend. So
yeah.
if it is 9 out of 10 million, the fail rate is fairly slow, small, although not all 10 million, of course, were iPhone 6 Pluses, but still it's a very small number.
Mm.
The some of the competitors didn't waste any time in coming up with little jibes, have they?
No. The likes of BlackBerry, I think, What was BlackBerry CEO? What did he do there?
He was launching the new BlackBerry Passport.
Right.
And he sent out a challenge to bend the phone. You know,
all right.
You can't bend our phone. The one that I really liked was Samsung's tweet, where they said, Galaxy Note Edge, curved, not bent.
Of course, that's a reference to the Galaxy Edge. It's actually got a curved screen.
It
goes around
yes.
to the side of
yeah.
the screen. LG... have said that our phone doesn't bend, it flexes.
And HTC, with a little bit poking tongue-in-cheek, said our phones are designed to withstand the most demanding environments, like your pockets.
Yeah. Now, I mean, fair enough. Like, it's good to poke a bit of fun, and Apple are good at poking fun at other tech vendors as well, so hey, why not? But at the same time, you know, don't get your phone out of your pocket and start, you know, bending it on purpose in your hands. That's a bit ridiculous, if you ask me.
That might void warranty.
Possibly.
Yes.
And Apple have said as well, you know, if your phone is affected by this, then do take it into to an Apple store and get the geniuses or the Apple Care team to have a look at it. And you know, they'll probably have a look at it and determine if it was done on purpose or not, or whatever. So, you know, it's not like they're throwing you out and saying it's your problem. Mm. There's legitimate ways to resolve the issue.
That's right. Now, their woes haven't really stopped there. They released a patch to their latest iOS, iOS 0.1, and withdrew it straight away, fairly quickly.
So iOS 8.0.1 was released and then promptly got unreleased.
Well, they added some unwanted features into the new version, didn't they?
Yes. What was it? So there was some sort of bug or something in HealthKit. Where they needed to fix it, and so that was what the release was all about. Yep. And so, as a consequence, some fingerprint scanning was prevented
From working,
and I think some SMSs weren't going through as well as a result.
Well, some interruption to the cellular service. Mm. But a day later, they did push out 8.0.2,
right,
which fixes the fix. The Band-Aid on the Band-Aid.
Oh, no. Well, you know, and this is the thing. I always sort of tend to wait before I apply updates, particularly to the whole phone. Like, if it's just an app on the phone, I'll get it pretty quickly, depending on how important that app is to my day-to-day stuff. But if it's a whole phone, and same with operating systems as well, you should always sort of maybe wait a couple of days. Let someone else find the problems first.
Don't be the guinea pig.
Mm.
Don't be on the bleeding edge.
Or if you are an early adopter, and the same goes for if you sign up for a beta program. Mm.
Be prepared for a bit of inconvenience.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I guess, you know, both of us are involved in software development to some extent. We know what the trials and tribulations are of putting out a new version, and if something's really critical, you sweat a lot.
Now, finally, there was some 19-year-old dude touted as being... the next big thing. He's developed a few apps already, and he's only 19-year-old. It's such a in thing to be these days, a teenager that's made it, you know, to
made
the
it good.
Millionaire status, or I don't know if he actually has made it to that sort of status, but he's definitely shown that he's capable.
He's made it to the level where he could finance his own college tuition and afford his own accommodation
in
the US. So that's it's not too bad.
Which in the US might be a millionaire.
And that's only the first semester.
So we're talking about a guy by the name of John Meyer. He's actually ended up turning down an internship offered to him by Apple.
Yes, which is most people would probably, you know, give their left leg for it.
Yes.
And he's turned it down, yep.
Now, an internship, I mean, oftentimes internships can be not paid for, but in this particular case, it was a paid opportunity. Mm.
Not a bad salary. $60,000 US a year. It's pretty good for an intern, yeah.
Yeah. He responded by saying that, well, we should say, first of all, that... how he got to this. He's been writing iOS apps since the age of 14 years old. This just reminds me how old I am, right? So,
thank you, Mark, for that reminder. How old you are, therefore how old I am.
Well, you know, at 14, I was writing maybe AppleSoft programs on BASIC. I think AppleSoft BASIC. On my Apple IIe, maybe. This guy had an iPhone when he was 14 years old. That's, you know...
But there's a huge opportunity these days of being able to distribute what you write. So, you know, in your day, if you came up with this brilliant idea, how are you going to distribute it?
Yes.
You weren't able to go into manufacturer advertising and that type of thing.
We didn't have the internet.
That's right. Whereas today, you put it on iTunes and Apple Store, and if people like it, they buy it.
Mm. He was famous for an iPhone app being like a flashlight
right.
app.
Yep.
Which... eventually, in I think iOS 7 or maybe 6, I can't remember, got introduced into the phone itself. So people saw that flash on the back of the phone was actually quite useful if it could be turned on permanently.
Yep.
And even last night I used the very function. So if it wasn't for this guy, then perhaps that function wouldn't have been available.
Yeah.
So, you know, kudos to him for doing that.
And he's got another app which is really, really good, which allows you to take a photo of a group of people and then using the eye scanning bit of the software in the phone, what it does, it takes multiple photos. And it looks at the photo that where most people have got their eyes open and where most people are smiling.
Right.
And says, so this is the best one to use.
Constantly monitors the stream or the video stream, I guess, and works. works out when, when that's fantastic.
It's a brilliant idea because how many times do you take a group photo and half the people are, you know, eyes are shut or
looking in the other direction or something like that? Yeah, that's amazing. That's fantastic. So it's good good to know that, you know, there, some people stick to their own. Apparently, he prefers to be an entrepreneur as opposed to being a developer for Apple. Yeah. So,
well, good on him. I think it's brilliant.
Stick really to his good. Own devices. Yes.
Now, we are going to partake in a bit of magic soon in terms of Alibaba.
Oh, yes.
Yes. So that's something
that... Abracababa?
Abracadabra Alibaba. And because we can. You're listening to TechnoGaze on Joy 94.9.
TechnoGaze. Made in Melbourne, for Australia and the world. Joy 94.9.
Yes, we are in Melbourne and it is TechnoGaze. And we're looking at some magic. Magic in the terms of Alibaba.
Alibaba. Is this, I think of either a makeup shop or a, I don't know, some sort of takeaway taco
Alibaba
vendor.
And his band of 40-something or other.
Oh.
This is bad.
It's gone.
Go on. It's a very famous story, Alibaba. And his band of 40 thieves. Actually, it's his band of 40 thieves.
Now, what are Alibaba in tech circles? What is this?
Okay, so Alibaba is a Chinese tech company that was founded back in 1999, and their specialty was business-to-business portals. So when they first started, they connected Chinese suppliers with consumers or businesses in the West who wanted to buy things from these Chinese suppliers, so to enable that market. So if you, for instance, wanted to make, I don't know, 10,000 iPhone cases, you could go into the portal, you could see which people were in the business of making iPhone cases and commission them to do it.
I could imagine is a big thing in China because, you know, it's all about the commodity market over there, you know, being able to make things cheaply, manufacture things cheaply. So having that sort of you know, intermediary to figure that out and have it all online is actually, I can imagine, would be very fruitful.
And of course, with language differences and differences in business culture, having something like this is a way to open up the market to the rest of the world. That's how they started, but then they moved into a consumer-to-consumer portal, and you could probably think of that more as eBay, where they now have got 20 of the top 10 visitor sites globally in terms of the Alibaba group.
Wow.
Yeah.
So okay.
And their consumer-to-consumer product portal has got a billion products in it.
Wow. So this is an example, I guess, of it's where a website started off with its smaller beginnings, a B2B portal, adapted itself to become C2C, I guess, is a term you don't hear very often, but customer to customer. Yep. And now they're worth how much?
231 billion. That's their market cap. And they raised $25
billion.
Billion? Billion.
Wow. So they floated when about a week ago.
Yeah, right. Last week.
Okay.
They're now worth more than Facebook or IBM or Samsung or Oracle.
How many Facebooks are they worth?
Oh, I don't know how many.
How many Mikeys are they worth?
Exactly. And basically, they're only a little bit smaller. Well, sorry, the ones bigger than them are Apple, Google, and Microsoft.
Wow.
So that's not bad.
Something to look out for. That's an interesting, because it's perhaps a, you know, being a Chinese-based company, you know, it's probably the largest Chinese-based tech company anyway.
Well, it's one of the few ones, I think, that have floated on the US stock exchange. They did try to raise capital inside China itself, but found it difficult. So they went to the US. Now, what's interesting is that one of their early investors was Yahoo.
Right.
And you would think that Yahoo did very well out of this because they got $7 billion worth of cash and they got 27% of the stock of from the IPO.
Right.
So it's a sizable investment in such a, you know, large organization. But the market has seen it slightly differently.
Right.
Because, you know, everyone's been questioning, oh, well, what's the value in Yahoo? What are its products? Where is it going?
Yeah.
And now what a lot of people are saying, well, the only value to Yahoo is the fact that they own shares in Alibaba. That's all they're good for.
And here's a reminder of it. Here's the market cap of Alibaba versus what Yahoo was back in the day. And that seems to be the general thing with Yahoo at the moment. They seem to be, you know, buying up little bits of companies here and there and sort of holding their own in a market sense, as in a finance market sense, actually not really being very much in our face at all for consumer
no.
You know, uses. I guess I mean, what Yahoo 7 are probably the local
is what you see in Australia. Yeah, that's right.
But how strong is that as a brand? I don't think it's particularly strong. I'd say that Channel 7 itself is much stronger.
Mm.
You know, so
yes,
that says a lot about Yahoo. It used to be that we'd always Yahoo a search term.
Yeah, but you know, Yahoo do have other products out there in terms of you know, blogs and so on. But yeah, it is a challenge for them. They've seen on a lot of cash, and they're expected probably to return some of the $7 billion to shareholders.
Yep.
In way of share buybacks and also perhaps buying some companies.
Indeed.
Now, on the music scene. We've had something recently that's a little bit different.
Yes, so I was listening to Beckfast this morning with our friend Beck, who presents here at Joy 94.9, and she played a song by Radiohead's frontman, Tom York. And the interesting thing about this particular song, or this particular album that it comes from, in fact, is that he has teamed up with the website BitTorrent.com as a mechanism for listeners to purchase an album. Traditionally we think of BitTorrent as being a way of obtaining things for free, whether that be legitimately or not. And in fact, you know, BitTorrent is a protocol. So it's a way to transfer files between people. You know, hundreds of people might want the same file, and there's it's a file sharing app to enable that sort of that transfer. But this is actually there's also a web presence called BitTorrent.com.
Okay.
Which I guess you could say is a brand behind it, or it's a you know, trademarked company name that has teamed up with Tom York from Radiohead. Now, what they've done is introduce a concept called BitTorrent bundles, which seems to be like a new sort of file format or something. It was very sketchy. I didn't actually go ahead and buy the album myself, it seems to be this way of protecting the content before it before you pay for it. So you basically get this bundle, and as long as you get past the what they're calling the pay gate, which is a for this one is $6 to purchase, you then get access to the files inside it.
So do you know if you download the files first or?
This is what wasn't particularly clear in the like they've got a very sort of, you know, step by step. This is what you'll be in for when you want to buy this.
Yep.
But very consumer oriented. It wasn't very much like didn't really explain the technology behind it or anything like it. It sounded like from just like what I could tell anyway. It sounded like it was like a encrypted file which could be unencrypted by. What's the word? Decrypted after paying my little sum of money.
Right. So this is, you know, an alternative to iTunes?
Yeah. So iTunes, you know, you download from iTunes servers when you download or you know, the Google Play Store is the same deal. You actually get it from a central spot, and that's obviously distributed around the world. Like Apple don't just have one server sitting in Cupertino. They've got hundreds of thousands of servers all around the world to services. So BitTorrent is like essentially the same thing. You can download from anywhere, but it's actually transferred from other people's computers, not from a server farm somewhere.
So is there an element of cheekiness to this that is basically, you know, if you, let's say your computer is running a BitTorrent client, you're effectively serving up this peer-to-peer information, potentially. Is there a bit of cheekiness in that he's using your machine to distribute so he gets money?
Some would argue that that's, it's kind of a, the internet is supposed to be open and it's supposed to be free, right? Well, that was the original intent. I would argue that, you know, before the concept of download quotas became a big thing, which is, and it's always been a big thing here in Australia, but particularly in the US, like download quotas haven't really been that much of a big deal
until recently. Yes.
So you know, the fact that I was offering download and uploads to other people
didn't matter.
Didn't really matter because it wasn't counting to anything that I had any care over. So, you know, it's. Most of the quotas that are available today are far beyond what a typical user would use anyway, unless you're downloading many TV shows or music tracks or whatever. So, you know, I guess if that's what you sign up for, that's what you sign up for. But the other kicker about this particular this option is the revenue from the CD. So the CD cost is $6.
Yep.
The revenue obtained from it is distributed more evenly, you could say. 90% of the revenue goes to the artist.
Right, which is pretty good because, you know, traditionally the artists don't get a lot, do they?
Yeah, well, that's the thing, right? So you look at iTunes or even the traditional CD, like the you go back in history and you look at the CD distribution model, there were always reports back then of maybe, 30 or 40 cents of every CD being sold. The money, that is the amount of money that goes to the artist, as opposed to, even iTunes. Where it is downloaded, it's over the internet. There's no CD production going into it.
There's no trucks to take the CDs to the store and stuff like that.
Yeah. So it even with that sort of model, it still seems to be that the artist is getting a very low part of the revenue stream. The difference here, and I don't know if as a consumer I really care so much about how much is actually going to the artist versus the distributor. Mm. But the big thing here is that 90% of the revenue is going to Radiohead's frontman,
yep,
who is the artist of the CD, and not to the distribution channels.
It would be interesting to see if it takes off.
Yeah. Mm. It's got a brand behind it. You know, BitTorrent is a known medium. BitTorrent is a known name in terms of what we can and can't use. So, yep. Hey... that might give it some weight, but whether that actually makes it big or not is another thing. Again, it's another sort of attempt at disrupting the record industry, perhaps.
That's right. And it's an opportunity that, you know, artists don't need to have their own website and have their own pay gate type situation anymore.
Yeah,
they can use this.
If there's some sort of centralized of sorts fashion place to do it, then hey, if it's well established and well accepted, then... And Tom York himself has actually said, hey, you know, this is what we're trying it out. We're going to see where this goes. So, I'm sure they'll be monitoring if it would then be put up on the same BitTorrent sites that every other track or every other CD gets put up on as well. But, being aware that it exists, BitTorrent exists as a medium is probably a good thing.
Mm-hmm. You're listening to Technogaze on Joy 94.9. And coming up, we're going to be looking at what Eric Schmidt has said to the European Union.
Technogaze.
16 minutes to one, and we are going through the show very quickly.
we thought we had a lot to cover, and I think we're right.
Exactly. Now, Eric Schmidt is the chairman of Google.
Yes.
And he's been talking to the Europeans.
Has he now?
He has. Now, you know, we do know that Uber's been, you know, on and off the nose in Germany, and Google and other search engines have been told to expunge data from the search engine results within the EU.
Mm.
And some French workers are, you know, do have the right to limit how much email they check after hours. So, you know, the EU area is fairly regulated compared to the US.
Yeah.
And Eric Schmidt has said that, Europe needs to accept and embrace disruption. And the old ways of doing things need to change if they're going to face competition.
Right. So the alternative he's suggesting is, hey, accept Uber-style disruption or face unemployment?
Well, yeah, he's basically saying to them, if you don't do this, your unemployment's going to rise. Because unemployment in the EU is rising, whereas in the US it's falling.
Oh, right.
Over the last little while. So they're taking longer to come out of the GFC than other places. But, you know, I don't know whether it's a total do this or do that type option. And I think there's probably something in between. And, I don't know whether Uber is disruption. And, we've had conversations about this before.
Particularly seems to be that their business model now is just challenge every law that applies to the industry that they're in, as opposed to providing a good service and making it, making their service available to all. I think there is a. It's almost like we're splitting hairs on that respect, but it is actually a difference in operation that that could make or break a company like Uber.
Yeah.
They as you rightly pointed out, Germany they've had a bit of a stoush with them on the laws in, I think, Berlin in particular.
And a number of cities, actually, they've had.
And we're talking about other sites like Airbnb as well, where often the situations have arisen that, you know, maybe people would offer their apartment on Airbnb, and due to laws that exist, you know, pre-existing laws around squatting and so forth, they can actually take over the apartment and claim residency in that apartment without payment to the original person. So it, you know, there's some challenges in the sense of the law still exists, right?
Yeah, and to me, it's, you know, obviously somebody like Uber's in there to make money.
Yep.
And so yes, they want to make changes because it gives them an opportunity to make money, and they do wrap it up and market it as it's good for the consumer because it's more convenient, it's cheaper and stuff like that. But I think you really need to pick which laws you're going to challenge and why you're going to challenge them, because, you know, why are the laws there? Are they there because there was a situation 100 years ago where they were needed and today there's not, and therefore, yes, we probably should dismantle these laws?
Yep.
Or are they there for a reason?
Well, and a lot of, good laws are born from, you know, human nature, I guess, and you know, being able to control sort of the bad things that people do.
Yep.
Regardless of the technology or the environment that we're living in. So, you know, if it's a good law in that respect, then, hey, that's probably something that shouldn't necessarily be challenged.
That's
just
right,
because
yeah.
we're on the internet. You know, and this is the most frustrating thing about a lot of this disintermediation that occurs or disruptive technology that occurs is, you know, some people just simply get on that bandwagon of saying, oh, it's a great thing just because it is on the internet, as opposed to what does it actually give me that's better
and different
than how it was before.
I read an article a while ago that said that, you know, in the early days of the internet, when there were, you know, new features or some more disruptive type of things. So if you look at something like Amazon, where you can order online rather than going to a bookstore and things like that,
yep.
that these were the low-hanging fruit that provided immediate benefit, and they did truly disrupt. And now what companies are doing is they're basically cherry-picking, looking for loopholes in laws that allow them to do certain things to their advantage without necessarily delivering that value to the customer.
Eventually, those loopholes will probably be, especially if it becomes an issue, as in if the exploitation of those loopholes actually causes further concern or further issues in society, then, you know, if democracy is doing its job, it will fix those loopholes, and people and perhaps those business models will kind of deflate and disappear. I'm kind of, particularly with the likes of Uber, I'm kind of on the fence, because you look at the taxi industry, say in Melbourne, they just did a massive commission into this, or sort of an analysis of where it's at, and some changes have occurred, and that's not just from a consumer point of view, but also from a taxi owner and operator point of view.
Although some of them may not agree to that.
Yeah. So, and all the time when those kind of things are happening, there's always going to be, naysayers to it.
Not everyone likes change.
But if it's someone external who doesn't actually understand the concerns and the issues that the industry faces, and they're just blowing their way through it by, you know, introducing an internet site or a phone app, that's not necessarily going to get you very far. You know, you hear talk of Uber's founders throwing tantrums, essentially, at different law organisations now, and thinking, well, is that really a good business model to push?
Yeah.
And the other thing about it is, like, you look at some of the, like, Airbnb, for example, the costs that actually go to Airbnb, like, it might be much cheaper for me to book a place in, say, the middle of Manhattan in New York over Airbnb than it would be to have a hotel room, you know, like, literally half the price. But the actual proportion of that is money that goes to Airbnb itself is pretty astronomical,
right?
Like, in comparison. So, you know, they are essentially sort of, you know, massing up all this cash.
Yep.
What benefit what do they provide as a consequence, and apart from just a platform, a website to go to?
Well, from the consumer point of view, it's ease of use, isn't it?
And, but that's not really of benefit to the overall operation of offering stuff. It's, okay, great user experience. Like, you do that once and it's done. You might tweak it here and there, but it's not like a massive part of the whole chain. When it comes down to it, another website might come up and reduce that price a little more. And
well, I guess that's one of the dangers, if you like, to organisations or companies that are working in the internet area, is that the cost of entry of competitors is relatively low. So somebody else can come up with a better model and maybe with cheaper pricing so that the owners of these apartments or houses get a bigger take.
Well, we had a listener, Andrew, email us in, actually showing his respect to companies like Uber, because they do it better than the likes of the incumbents. Mm. So, yeah, I guess it is all about progression.
Yeah. Mm. Now, this is enough European bashing, I think.
Says he, who's of...
What?
You've spent some time in Europe, haven't you?
I have spent some time in Europe, but you have totally ignored the segue.
Oh, what?
To bashing.
No!
Yes, because bash is something special.
You're bashing, right. Yes. Bashgate. No, wait, what was it? Bash...
I don't... The bash bug.
Whatever.
So there's... In the last
shell
few days...
Shocked. Shell shocked. Hashtag shell shocked.
Yes, what's that?
So bash is a shell.
What? Like something you discover on the beach?
Yes. No. Bash is a shell. A shell is a command line interface. So
like
when
the DOS window in Windows?
Yes.
DOS
when command, you see yeah. text on a screen, often in internet movies, on movies on that have hackers doing their thing.
Where they type a million lines of code with one syntax, without a syntax error.
That's a shell.
Right. Okay. Yep.
And this week, there was a major flaw discovered in Bash, which is one type a shell that you can have on phones, on computers, on servers, basically everything that runs a Linux or a Unix typically uses Bash as their main shell.
Right, and that's going to be a lot of websites, because one of the big advantages of Linux, of course, is no cost.
Hmm.
So, yeah, let's put it on our website. Yeah. It makes a lot of things vulnerable.
The tricky thing as well is that the shell commands are often exposed not just through people logging on to the server to get to the shell
yep.
itself, but also logging. It might be an option that's available through some web interfaces.
Mm-hmm.
So, CGI... which is you might see sometimes in your web browser, cgi-bin,
mm-hmm.
To a URL, a web address that you go to.
Yep.
That's an indication that they're using CGI on the server, and there's often hooks from that to enable shell commands to be run.
Out, yep.
There's protections involved there, but this particular vulnerability enabled quite easily the running of arbitrary code.
Yeah. Now, what's interesting is that this little bug's been around for about 22 years.
Yeah. Oops.
And a lot of people tout the advantages of open source and that, you've got many eyes looking it over and therefore you're going to find bugs and so on, which is true if you bother to look at it.
Mm.
But we shouldn't take it as 100%, everything's going to be bug-free.
No, and I don't think anyone actually does say that, it's 100% bug-free. And that's the nature of open source is that, you get people... other things that write code. So because people write code, people make mistakes. The same could be said for Windows as well, or Apple, or other proprietary code bases. The difference is that we can actually discover it ourselves. So, this shell bash vulnerability has been discovered by people in the community.
Mm.
So, it's an indication that the system does work.
Slowly.
It's very slowly.
So everyone's going to be patching their software soon, I hope.
Yes, and this is a challenge because there's a lot of stuff that runs this, and it's a lot of stuff that may not necessarily be constantly updated with the latest software updates and so forth. So it's very much a good idea to get the latest software updates for your own computer, particularly if you're running, say, a Unix-based system like Apple OS X.
Yep.
Or any of the others as well. Not saying that OS X is actually vulnerable out of the box, but it's a good idea to get the latest bash shell anyway.
That's right. We are rapidly running out of time, as usual, and we're going to talk very soon about growing or fermenting your own clothing here on Technogaze on Joy 94.9.
Yummy.
Technogaze.
Technogaze, 3 minutes to one. Now, Mark, Australians are an inventive lot, aren't we?
We are, yes.
And some students in the Queensland University of Technology have come up with a way to brewing textiles.
Really?
Yes. They're using things like coffee, tea, red wine, and they're using something called the kombucha process, which actually ferments this liquid to come up with something that's slimy, thick and smelly during the manufacture process, but it ends up with something that's similar to leather.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right. So,
and it's fairly thin, and when it dries, it gets even thinner, and yeah.
So you either brew beer or you brew...
Clothing. Yeah.
the latest in university student activities.
And sustainable manufacture.
Is it edible as well?
No, I don't.
I suspect not.
No, probably not.
No.
But they do ferment it by adding things like sugars and yeasts and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
Hmm. That's about it for today.
Yep.
If you've missed any part of the show, or perhaps you're looking to peruse previous episodes, you can do so by browsing to joy.org.au/technogaze. Coming up next is the 1 PM News Bulletin with Tim Lennox, followed by Cravings with Pete Dillon. And later on, don't forget Fender Bender and then Critical Hit before an excellent music mix lineup to take you through the afternoon. That's if you're not watching the grand final.
Critical Hit, one of my favourite shows, being a gaming show.
Yes.
Even though I don't game very much myself, it's good to tune in and
understand some of the terms that you hear bandied about.
Yes.
Yes. Mark, thank you.
No worries. It's been great as always.
Yep. And if you are a footy follower, I hope your team does win. Go
Hawks. Right. There we go.
Have a great weekend, everyone, and we'll catch you next week.
See ya.
Technogaze on Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.